Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Was the iPhone a novelty or a knockoff? Find out today on Advanced. Hi, friends. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Naomi Beeshavel. Today is February 6th, and we're finishing up our article, Is Copying Theft or Innovation? And the question I asked just a moment ago was the iPhone a novelty or a knockoff? And here to help us understand what that means, welcome back, Bill Quinn.
Yeah, great question, Naomi, and glad to be back here today for day three of this article. We started off this article talking about the case of Apple versus Samsung and who owns the rectangle. And so you're weaving in the iPhone today because we do talk about Steve Jobs. We get back to Apple
right
today.
So was it a novelty, something new and unique and different, or was it something that was a knockoff, a copy of other things?
Well, it's not that easy to answer that question, and there were other variations of smartphones out there already on the marketplace.
Well, also here to help us out today is our special guest, Craig Shaver. Welcome back.
Well, it's good to be back, Naomi and Bill. And to continue a little bit further, everything that we see and do and have around us really is a knockoff from somebody previous to us.
That's kind of a deep statement.
It is. And when you think about it, you know, how much of what we say or we do, is it really unique, authentic? Or is it just a variation of somebody else in the past who has made a certain product or a certain idea?
In the Bible, someone once said, there's nothing new under the sun.
Yeah.
And I think that comes to mind when we think about things like patent law and creativity and intellectual property.
Yeah, and that intellectual property was actually at the heart of that case between Apple and Samsung. One funny thing I want to mention regarding that, Naomi, it says here the jury awarded over $1 billion in damages to Apple. There's two things with it. One, there was a popular internet meme, I would say, going around saying that Samsung delivered the money in nickels, like trucks, right? This thing was like went viral.
Oh, really?
Saying that Samsung paid off in nickels. False.
Okay.
Don't believe everything you see on the internet. And the other thing is the money has not been paid yet. And in fact, the final decision by the judge has not been made and it will be contested and appealed. This is going to take years to resolve.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Interesting. On page 13, we actually do have a little sidebar about those twin tablets, and it sort of shows the specs, specific elements of the design of each one. So you can sort of see how similar or how different they are there. But it is an interesting case, and it brings up this whole question of, is copying necessarily a bad thing for businesses? It sounds like it would be. And Craig, on the first day you mentioned about how some inventors, like your father, come up with a really good idea and don't get credit for it.
It happens probably more than we realize. Unfortunately, it just takes time and it takes resources, backing, financial backing, to bring these things to market.
Okay. So, of course, there are some cases where people really did have the idea and really didn't get the credit or the payment for it. But that brought us into the fact that today innovation often happens in a bit of a different way.
Right. And it's not all bad. There are some positives to that, Naomi. And we talked about some of the things that the borrowed inspiration does provide yesterday. There are more this, more that, more choice, more competition.
Okay. Basically, the difference being instead of one guy with one good idea, we have often groups of people working together, people tweaking things, people making smaller changes. And it sounds like maybe it's not quite fair to the first guy, but we found some reasons why it can be quite positive. And what were some of those reasons? You just mentioned one or two.
Yeah, more choice in the marketplace. Look at how many smartphones are available in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. And there's a wide range of prices, so that broadens the number of consumers that can buy them.
Okay. What else, Craig?
You also have advertising. You can advertise a product through many different channels these days because different people have worked on it, different companies, different countries even have collaborated. on developing something. And this creates also trends in the marketplace.
Okay. So the more popular something becomes, the more people want to buy it from the original guy or someone else. Either way, it's more business for everybody.
Yeah. And because of this trend, I mentioned when the iPhone first came out, not many people had them here in Taipei. But because of the competition, the price came down. It became available to far more people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, yesterday we mentioned a couple of fields where copying is allowed.
Cuisine was one that we talked about, and also design, the typographical fonts.
Mm-hmm. So actually, in those cases, it's okay to just take something and tweak it a little bit and pass it off as your own. And we'll begin today by discussing how there are other examples to mention. So let's get right into that on page 14.
Destructive or productive. There are many other examples, from fashion designs to football plays to financial innovations like index funds, that exhibit this marriage of copying and creativity. These examples do not prove that copying is always a force for good, but they do show that the relationship between imitation and innovation is more complicated than conventional wisdom suggests. Copying can be destructive, yet copying can also be productive. Just ask Apple. From its beginning, Apple was an active copier itself. In a 1994 interview, when Apple was a tiny minnow in comparison with the Leviathan it is today, Steve Jobs invoked Picasso's alleged dictum that good artists copy, great artists steal. Jobs went on to say that at Apple, we have always been shameless about stealing great ideas.
Our heading for this topic is destructive or productive, and that's, again, a set of opposite terms. On the first day, we saw how copying can either enable or inhibit innovation. Here we have these other words. What do they mean?
Well, destructive means to destroy something, to break it down. And productive means to build up and get a good result from something.
Okay. So we're still debating which one of these is copying, really. And as we continue, we see there are a lot of examples to consider.
Well, they talk about fashion designs. Every few years, it seems like the same fashion comes out again with minor changes, minor variations in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how many types of shoes can you make? But it's amazing. There are a lot of shoes. If you ever just look at shoes in an airport when people walk by, it's amazing that the variation there is, but it all started with one basic shoe.
That's true. Okay, so fashion designs to what?
Football plays to financial innovations like index funds. So, of course, if there's a successful play in a sport, the other teams are immediately going to copy that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's really no laws prohibiting that. And then we see index funds. Those would be mutual funds that actually follow certain groups of stocks. The most famous would be like a Standard & Poor's 500 index fund.
Okay, so all of these examples exhibit or show off a what?
A marriage of copying and creativity.
It's interesting that they call it a marriage.
Well, that means it goes hand in hand together.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do one without the other one.
Very interesting, because at the beginning of the article, most of us were thinking that these two words were opposites. The copying is one thing and creativity is the exact opposite thing, but here we're seeing that they can actually go together. These examples do not prove something.
They do not prove that copying is always a force for good, though, but they do show that the relationship between imitation and innovation is more complicated than we normally think.
Okay. So that relationship, that marriage between these two is more complicated than conventional wisdom suggests. What is conventional wisdom, Craig?
What the masses normally think of as being either correct or incorrect, being moral or immoral.
Okay. So there may not necessarily be a lot of fact underneath that.
Yes.
Right? Okay. And so copying can be destructive, but it can also be productive, as we just mentioned. And then we hit this next sentence, and I was just saying while we were listening to the reading that I kind of feel like there should be a little bit of a musical score here, like da-da-da-da. It's an exciting sentence, and what does it say, Craig?
Just ask Apple. From its beginning, Apple was an active copier itself.
What?
Makes you take your breath away.
Is it possible?
Yeah, we think of Steve Jobs as this fantastic innovator starting in the garage, him and Steve Wozniak building a computer from the ground up. But actually what these guys did for many years is they took some other people's really good ideas and just made some changes or tweaks in them.
Well, and of course, especially in the context of this specific article where we're finding out that Apple is the one who was trying to get these damages paid to them by Samsung for copying them, we think, how can they be copiers themselves if they're taking such a hard stance against Samsung? But here we are.
Well, a lot of it is timing, Naomi, and especially when companies are starting out, which we find out in this next paragraph, especially when they're starting out, they might be more prone to copying.
Okay, so we go back in time a little bit in this paragraph, don't we?
True, and just jumping on to what Bill said too, you talk about prone to copying. Mm. For a young startup company, a lot of times there will be leeway given. The large company will say, oh, he's so small. It's not a problem. I'm not going to go ahead and pursue this lawsuit because it's not worth it. You know, he's nickel dime. Mm. But later on, nickel dime becomes multi-billionaire company.
Mm-hmm. That's okay. A really good point.
And now the tables have turned.
They have turned for Apple, certainly. We're going back to 1994 here to an interview that happened when Apple was one of those nickel and dime kind of places.
Yeah, we see that sentence there. When Apple was a tiny minnow, meaning just a small player, in comparison with the Leviathan it is today, and Leviathan being the gigantic, the Titan. We talked about Battle of the Titans in the beginning of this article, so now it is a Titan. It's a Leviathan, a giant.
Right, and it's a fun metaphor here to call. Of course, sometimes we talk about it's just a small fish, a little fish, you know, in the pond, and we mean they're not very influential. A Leviathan, originally, it has connotations of being like a kind of a sea monster that's mm-hmm. very, very powerful. So it's a fun comparison there. Basically, they're saying it used to be very small, now it's a giant. But back in the day, in that interview, the great late Steve Jobs said what?
He said that good artists copy, using a takeoff from Picasso, his dictum, a short sentence, good artists copy, but great artists steal. Now, that you know, sort of scares me. Is this what we're using for innovation? Is this the moral standard that we're using? Mm. It's okay to steal? Because just a few minutes ago, we said it's okay to copy.
Right.
Where do we draw the line?
Well, it's interesting. That's actually that good artists copy, great artists steal would be the words of Picasso. And it's startling because we will go see Picasso exhibits in museums and think, oh, what a great artist. And it's almost a shameless statement that he would say, well I'm going to steal if it's good.
Right. Yeah. But of course, if you're an artist, it is a little bit different because it's still going to be you who's producing this and it's your hand and it's your mind. And so kind of in the art world, by default, you can't really be copying. Exactly, unless you're tracing.
But I was in Bali Island yesterday, and I went to a artist store, and they said, we'll make any copy, any painting you want, and they have books, and we'll put your name as the artist at the bottom. You know, I was taken back by what he said.
The Mona Lisa signed by Craig Shaver.
Wow. Okay, maybe I should take my statement back.
That's funny.
But it sounds like Steve Jobs probably should have taken his statement back too, because, of course, he's mentioning Picasso's idea here, probably a little bit tongue-in-cheek. I don't think he's trying to say, well, of course, we're proud that we steal. But in the next quote from his own mouth, he basically says just that.
Yeah. Jobs went on to say that at Apple – this is amazing. Quote, we have always been shameless about stealing great ideas.
Hmm.
End quote. Hmm. Wow. And so it's something, you know, a lot of times it's revealing. It's a revealing authentic statement from somebody. But then sometimes we say things we might regret later on.
Yes.
Certainly if we're going to start suing Samsung for $1 billion, might regret that statement from 18 years ago.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
I think so, too. And actually, personally, Steve Jobs has gone down a couple notches in my esteem of him.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately. I think at the time he probably felt quite bold to say something like this. Oh, well, we know that we're taking ideas from other people, but we're making them our own.
Right.
And, you know, we feel very strongly that, of course, we can get inspiration from other people. But then to take that statement and present it in this article, you know, in this situation, in this context, it's pretty startling.
It's almost kind of taking a position of, I don't care what anybody thinks,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, when people are successful, they can get a little arrogant and bold. But however, then you might want to, like, be careful then later on to not get too moralistic if you've mm-hmm. had other stances in the past.
Right. And those terms, morals and ethics, keep coming up from both of you. And
mm-hmm.
I think that is another side to this that can be pretty tricky.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't want to just take someone else's idea and steal it for yourself. But then at the same time, there is this sort of imitation being flattery. I don't know if it's always clear where the line is.
Well, we move then beyond the question of who's right, who's moral, then, and go back to the suit between Apple and Samsung, then, and really what it boils down to at the heart of it is a revenue issue.
Mm.
It's not about who's right, who's wrong. This actually then becomes, it's a money issue.
Everything always comes
yep.
back to money.
Yep.
All right, let's continue with our final reading for today and for this article.
Jobs was right. While he has often been invoked as a visionary, he was, as Malcolm Gladwell recently described, the greatest tweaker of his generation. On a visit in 1979 to the Xerox Research Center in Palo Alto, he became fascinated with a Xerox prototype computer that used a mouse and screen icons. Jobs took ideas he'd seen at Xerox, refined them, and made them central features of the Macintosh. The freedom to copy built Apple and gave us the great products we enjoy today. The surprising upside of copying has implications for how we think about our increasingly ideas-based economy. Consider one more example. In the 1980s, Hollywood tried to eliminate a fearsome new copying technology, the VCR. But the home video market, with all its copying, poured many more dollars into the studio's coffers than piracy was ever able to steal away. Major industries can't survive in the face of copying and sometimes even thrive due to copying. Apple's victory against Samsung does not change that. It just may make the next Apple all the less likely to launch.
So according to our writers, Jobs was right. Right about what exactly? What are we referring to here? How do we begin?
Well, we're going to go back to a quote here by a writer who's, you know, we're talking about Jobs. While his image is that he has been invoked as a visionary, he's viewed as this forward-thinking, innovative, creative guy. He was, but you know, there is a twist to it, and this is a quote from this Malcolm Gladwell.
Malcolm Gladwell, who wrote very famously, recently wrote a book called The Tipping Point, quite popular in the last few years. He described him as the greatest tweaker of his generation. So he was really good at adjusting things a little bit. It's not a very high compliment, I don't think. We learn about a specific story in Apple's history that I was very fascinated to read.
Yes, when you go back to 1979, Jobs took a tour of a research center for Xerox in Palo Alto, California, and he became fascinated, intrigued with the Xerox prototype computer that used a mouse and screen icons. Mm. Jobs took these ideas, it says, that he saw at Xerox, borrowed them, tweaked them, refined them, and by refining, he improved something to make it, even though it was a small change, he made it a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
But these are now the features that are found in Macintosh computers.
Right. This is what made it different when it came out. This was what made it exciting. You can use this mouse. You don't have to type in commands, you know, and you can just click on this icon and it opens up instead of having to run a file name. And that was what made it so exciting. And everyone thought, wow, what a creative company.
Yeah. What a breakthrough. So much easier to use than the computers that people had been using up until that time. And lo and behold, it really wasn't his invention.
I was so surprised to hear that.
Yeah.
I mean, he just took it from Xerox.
But why didn't Xerox sue Jobs?
That's a good question.
Because he was a minnow.
Aha. Okay, very good. So he was still that, again, that tiny company at that point. So yeah. They thought, we don't have to worry about this guy.
Yeah, you have to remember, back at that time, Xerox was at the top of the technology industry. They were one of the leaders up there with IBM back in this day. And Steve Jobs was really, at that time, not really anybody. But it's interesting. He was just on a visit. He didn't work there. He didn't have top secret files. He just happened to be on a visit, saw this thing, said, I like that idea.
But also back there, too, I think your companies were more open. Mm-hmm. It was sort of an open architecture.
Yeah.
You look at production aircraft manufacturing companies such as Airbus, which I'm very familiar with. They prohibit people from wearing soft shoes into the production facilities, soft-soled shoes. The reason is they found some people from a particular country that when they walked through there, the adhesive on the bottom of the shoes would pick up metal filings that were on the ground, and they could determine the alloy of metal they were using in production of airplanes.
Wow.
To give them certain strength, certain flexibility.
So
it's a whole different type of industrial espionage that you find out there these days.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
again, copying, yeah, it's good, but it also can be bad too.
Wow. So that freedom to copy back in the day, it says here, it built Apple. That's what created this, now the world's probably most well-respected company in many ways.
Yeah. And because of this copying, Apple was able to give us the great products that we do enjoy today.
Yes. I mean, put up your hand if you own an Apple product. I bet most of you do or want to. And so, yeah, fascinating to think about. As we finish up in our final section and the second column there on page 14, we see that there is a surprising upside of copying. What is an upside to something?
Well, an upside is the positive, the good things that might come from something.
Okay, and what are they?
Well, a good example is back in the 1980s, Hollywood movie productions were very concerned about the new technology, and that is the VCR, the video cassette recorder that we find in almost every house today.
Yeah. Now, you need to back up a little bit for somebody like me because I don't really remember a world without VCRs. Why would that be a threat to this industry?
Well, for one thing, the industry relied on people going and buying movie tickets, going to the theater. That is how they survived. And so they thought, if everybody has VCRs, they're not going to go to the movie theater. We're not going to make any money on these movies. We won't be able to make movies anymore.
Oh. Well, was that the case?
No. Well, look at today, streaming technology. Look at before streaming technology, we had CD-ROMs, DVDs.
Strangely, the opposite has happened.
Mm-hmm.
That is the implication with this, the unexpected implication or the complication or surprising result from this. The VCR has actually, if anything, I think made movies more popular.
And has made more money for these companies because people aren't just buying one ticket. They're purchasing all kinds of movies to have in their homes so they can watch them anytime. And that's become a massive industry, right?
And look at the price of one movie. It might be $21, $30 if it's a Blu-ray. 3D movies are $35, $40 as I have some. As opposed to going to the theater, you put down $8, $9, $10. You're making much more money by selling a DVD. A lot of times nowadays, too, even DVDs are coming out before the movie is released.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some of the new movies have
done
that because they want to get as much of the market as possible.
Mm-hmm. So the statement that our writers say here, like, but the home video market with all its copying. So they're saying this is an industry that's basically built on the idea of taking a movie from a theater and putting it into your home. And yet they've made more money.
Yeah, it actually made more money. It's put more dollars into the studio's coffers. A coffer is like a bank account or a purse. It's something that holds money. So that's what we mean by coffer. So the VCR put more money into their pocket than piracy was ever able to steal away.
Okay. And what is piracy?
Piracy is just making copies, illegal copies of somebody's innovation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that is still a problem today. And yet, even with copying, people, it seems to just grow the market more. People just want more of what they've gotten a taste of.
Well, with some copies, it actually drives the price down. But when you drive the price down, you increase the market share. There's more people who can afford that to actually buy the original or go see a movie.
Right, and then they don't want a poor quality copy anyway. If it's more affordable, they think, well, great, I'll buy it then. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's interesting how it has changed the market in ways that don't really do surprise us.
Yeah, it was unexpected. So, and there's an interesting outcome from this we see here in the last section, that major industries can survive in the face of copying.
Not only survive, sometimes more than that, it says they can even thrive. What's the difference between surviving and thriving?
Thriving is almost growing without restraint.
Mm-hmm.
Things grow very quickly. Surviving, you're barely alive.
Right.
You're not growing at all. You're just treading water.
Yeah. So I think a lot of the industries were afraid that they would maybe only be able to survive. And now more than that, they're thriving. They've come to life. They're doing new things, trying different things. And then we get back to the case that we started out with.
Apple's victory against Samsung does not change that. So it's not going to change this about people being able to copy and actually still do well and grow.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So Apple getting all that money from Samsung and declaring that they stole from them, that doesn't change the fact that copying can help industries. But what is the implication of that result?
Well, in this case, it says it might make Apple all the less likely to launch the next Apple.
Okay. So when we say the next Apple, what do we mean by that?
We're talking about the new little company that will be up and coming. They may not be the ones that are able to get off the ground like Steve Jobs did.
The new minnow may get thrown out of the pond.
Yeah.
All right.
You see that even with Disneyland. A lot of times Disneyland, when they see in Pakistan a caricature, a copy of Mickey Mouse on the side of a building, they'll have it taken away because it was not an original.
Okay.
They're very, very strong about that. Some companies are very protective.
Possessive, yeah. Yeah. Any final thoughts, Bill?
I have a question for our listeners. Have you ever bought a copied product and were you satisfied in it or disappointed in it?
Interesting question. I hope you'll let us know on our Facebook page or on our website. And of course, we have more wonderful articles coming up for you this month, so I hope you'll come back and join us then. Thanks, everyone, for being with us. We'll see you next time. Until then, this is Naomi,
Bill,
and Craig
saying goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye now.